Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Award-winning playwright August Wilson was largely self-educated, but anyone who knew him growing up knew he was brilliant. He turned to words early on in the 2015 PBS documentary, August Wilson, The Ground on Which I Stand. He explained the attraction.
I just had a fascination with the words and the idea that words can say things and that you can twist them and turn them, and the idea of metaphor and things like this just intrigued me. It was a whole world there to be explored.
And explore he did. His body of work is not the biggest, but by many it is judged to be among the greatest, if not the greatest, including his series of 10 plays about the African-American experience over the course of a century, known as the Century Cycle. The Short North Stage and other arts organizations in Columbus are devoting a year of homage to that work with a festival. Coming up, we'll hear from Nanette Macy-Junes, Executive Director of the Columbus Museum of Art. Also, Patricia Winbush of Past Productions. That's a Columbus company devoted to staging works by Black writers. Joining us now is Peter Yackel, the executive director of Short North Stage. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Well, thank you, Ann. It's a pleasure to be here.
I actually wrote welcome back because it feels like you've been here before, because we've talked so much about different projects along the way. Also, Mark Clayton Southers, he's the director and artistic director of the August Wilson Festival. He returns to the Short North Stage after directing Passing Strange there in 2013. Plenty of accolades his way as well. Welcome so much to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Yackel, a story, something happened last night at Gem of the Ocean that kind of illustrates the incredible appeal of August Wilson in any context.
Yeah, it was pretty startling, actually. You know, when you're opening a show on a Thursday night, there's always a lot of jitters. There's a lot of last-minute details to be taken care of. And that was very true last night. But about 15 minutes before the show began, the reading, a young man and a young woman rushed into the theater very excited, and they said that they had heard that on their cross-country trip from New York City to Bloomington, Indiana, that we were going to be doing a reading of The Gem of the Ocean. Were there still tickets available? When the box office manager swiped his credit card, he noticed that he had a very famous last name, and he mentioned that to him. "You have a very famous last name, Jesse Eisenberg." And he said, "Yes, that's me. I am Jesse Eisenberg." And so we had, you know, someone who is very much interested in theater. He explained that he had seen Fences on Broadway, that he was a big fan of August Wilson, and he could not pass up an opportunity to see another one of his plays because he has only seen Fences as a live performance in the cycle.
And Fences is one of the 10 in the cycle. It's somewhere around the middle, right?
It's the 1950s.
Okay. All right.
And we will be doing it at the theater in September under Mark's direction.
Over the course of this year. Mark Clayton Southers, playwright, director, producer, tell us about the cycle and what we're even talking about in the first place, the Century Cycle. I've also seen it referred to as the Pittsburgh Cycle.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Okay.
we prefer to call it the Pittsburgh
yeah.
Century Cycle.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's just a body of work that I don't think will ever, anything like it will ever be repeated or celebrated on the level that it is, this will be celebrated on. I mean, he's captured African-American life, the Africa in America, for the last century. And it's just a great body of work that overlaps with different characters. And it takes place, 9 of the 10 plays take place in Pittsburgh's Hill District, where I actually live. And so it's just refreshing to come to other cities and work on the work, you know, with different actors and get the pronunciation of the streets and things right. You know, it's a different audience when it's when it's in Pittsburgh. It's a different audience because the audiences react to different things.
They are familiar with references
when you're out of town. But all over the country and actually the world, August's work touches the common man because he deals with all the different things that happen in the life for the common man, you know, that are connected. And it doesn't matter what your background is. People can relate to him. You know, that's what makes his poetic work so strong.
We are you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a year-long festival of the work of August Wilson, the playwright August Wilson, focused primarily or entirely on the Pittsburgh Century Cycle, which is a series of 10 works by August Wilson that span a century, different periods over the 20th century in the life and times of African Americans, focusing on a place, pretty narrow place in and of itself in Pittsburgh. Peter Yockel, how did you come up with this idea for a festival?
Well,
last year was the 10-year anniversary of his death in 2005. Yeah.
Yes. This process has been a year-long process of bringing all together all the collaborators. But it really began in 2013 when Mark Clayton Southers, the festival director, came to Short North Stage, and he directed one of our early musicals, Passing Strange. And it was such a success, and we had such a great time working with Mark. You know, we knew that we wanted to work with him again. And during that 6 weeks he was here, he kept telling me, Peter, you need to bring August Wilson to Columbus. You need to bring August Wilson to Columbus. And part of that stuck with me so clearly. I guess I love August Wilson myself. We had met Mark initially because he had directed Gem of the Ocean over at Human Race Theater Company in Dayton, Ohio. And also, as it turns out, I was born in Pittsburgh. I spent the first 4 years of my life there. Mm. I had a grandmother who lived close to the Hill District, a great-grandmother who lived close to the Hill District. So it always stuck in my mind. And this is a funny part of the story. Our bank is PNC, and they sponsored the August Wilson Negron on which I stand. And I was making a deposit last February. There was an ad for that
on the ATM machine, or
no, at the behind the teller. You know, okay. These TV cameras or TV screens are everywhere, ubiquitous now. And I thought, maybe PNC Arts Alive will be interested in sponsoring a festival of August Wilson's work here. Maybe this is the moment that Mark has been slowly, assiduously creating for all of us here in Central Ohio. And so we applied for a grant, and we did receive funding through PNC Arts Alive for the festival. Now, the expanded part of the festival developed because it's such a rich set of plays, and there are so many influences in August's life that you could draw upon, like art and so forth.
You know, Mark,
visual art.
Mark Clayton's others were so lucky to have this festival here because, as you pointed out in reading your comments about the work, it's so layered, and you get different emphasis if you can see and or hear or experience the entire series.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but they all stand on their own.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I like to say is that it appeals to folks differently, and I'm talking about white folks and black folks. You know, African Americans, they hear their grandfather, their fathers, their mothers, their sisters, their daughters, their brothers. They hear, they can relate to these characters as someone that they know. And it's different for the Caucasian viewer. They're like a fly on the wall for black life, you know, to experience it and have a better appreciation for it, you know, better than what we see in 11 o'clock news, you know, and in the media. And I say this sometimes, is that I think that the election of our first president of color, modern day, you know, Barack Obama, I think August Wilson fans were partly responsible for that, because over the last 25 years, his work has been on the regional level in all the regional theaters for the last 25 or so years. And people who go to those plays, the audience is primarily a white audience on those regional level, you know, depending on what city you're in, you know. But I think they go home and they have a better appreciation for black life, because they can relate to some of the characters as, you know, okay. All right. And then when they go back into the world, they have a different view, you know. So
I was thinking, I was looking at a clip. Is it Two Trains Pass?
Running.
I don't know. I'm going to have that glitch. But Two Trains Running, in that I was looking at a clip of that to refresh my memory about it. And in they're in a
People should know what your glitch is.
Yeah,
the glitch
is
the Romare Bearden piece, watching the good trains, you know.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So
right.
They should know that. So it's all art.
Which is what we're going to get into that.
It's an art-induced glitch, which isn't bad.
No, not at all. But it is a glitch. So two trains running, and it takes place in a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. Where people are waiting.
1960s.
And one of the actors is talking about guns and blacks and mm-hmm. the juxtaposition of guns and blacks. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so prophetic when I went back. Now, when I first had seen it a long time ago, it didn't have that same sort of connection for me.
Right.
But in the last couple of years, because of what's happened and the whole issue
can't
of
say
guns,
it in the same sentence.
No, you can't.
Yeah,
and
and it comes across as funny.
Yeah,
in the delivery of it.
Right.
But it's serious stuff. It's serious stuff, you know. Here's the thing. The whole goes back to the whole flower.
It wasn't
on the wall.
As funny when I watched it.
Well,
this
it depends
morning.
On how it's delivered. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the whole thing is that goes back to the whole fly on the wall thing. See, when you watch August Wilson plays, you're watching African Americans sitting around, you know, not around the white man talking. And now when you watch Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and there's white characters in the room with them, it's a different type of conversation. But when those four men are in the basement by themselves, it's a different conversation than it is up in the studio. You know what I mean? So on Two Trains Running, you're looking at folks who are going about their daily life and they're in a room and they're in this diner and they're having conversations or reading a newspaper and they're talking about black life. And the language is raw and it's realistic. That's what makes it realistic. You know, a lot of people have an issue of the N-word being used in August Wilson plays. Well, August Wilson was a recorder of the people. You know, he was an observer of the people. And when you tell the stories, you have to tell the stories, you know. A lot of people think they got to a certain level in life where, you know, the N-word being used is inappropriate, you know. But when you're looking at a dramatist telling a story, it's that dramatist's idea, it's his job to convey the story, it is truth. You know,
and truth was for me at the heart of Gem of the Ocean. It's the truth is freedom. The truth will set you free. And that resonated with me that he has to say what he's seeing. He has to tell us what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
How did he produce the plays? How did he research for them? How did he work?
Well,
do we know about that?
What I know about it is from what I know is that August had a system that he developed with Lloyd Richards, where they started at Yale University with a production, and then they took it across the country to different theaters, you know, Pittsburgh Public Theater, the Mark Taper Forum, Louisville Actors Theater, Huntington, all these different theaters that had a nice theaters with professional actors, and August would work on the work. He would, you know, he would work on it and listen to it. He was a great listener, and he would listen to the actors. And some of the actors would suggest different things. The great actor Anthony Chisholm, who's a friend of mine, made some suggestions for the development of Jitney, you know, where he talked about the tailor and different things. He played the character of Fielding. And you go through this process over a year or 2 years before it gets to Broadway.
Okay.
And you come up with – he came up with these tight, richly knitted plays that have a musicality to them. It's a flow, and it's his language, and it's the poetry that's weaved in and out of there. And he's talking about African-American history, you know, recent and past. And he infuses our African connection as well, especially in Joe Turner's Come and Gone and Gem in the Ocean, where there's two ritualistic scenes that deal with the Middle Passage, you know. So he was great at it's just an amazing feat that he got all these stories down on paper, you know, and published, you know, because it provides so much opportunities for not just actors, but for the designers and directors and producers and for the patrons. I mean, he's left a great legacy. A lot of people just aren't aware of it now. I met a young lady the other day here who told me that she was a thespian. I said, oh, yeah. She said, yeah, I went to school for theater. I said, okay. Well, I'm in town. We're working on the August Wilson play. Never heard of August Wilson.
Whoa.
Never, ever heard of August Wilson. I said, well, that's your school's fault. you know. That's your school's fault for that, you know. And I had told her to Google it, you know. And
get your Googler out.
Exactly. I was at an airport one time on my way to the American Stage Theater in St. Petersburg, Florida, where I was going to direct the August Wilson play. And I met this guy. He was sitting next to me. We had a delay. And, you know, I'm on my laptop, and he's like, we start talking. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to work on an August Wilson play. Never heard of August Wilson. This guy's a doctor. He's an African-American doctor. He Googled him, and he's been in touch with me. He's a fan now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But they know about Tyler Perry. You know what I mean? Folks know about Tyler Perry because it's just the way the world is. You know what I mean?
But August Wilson, the name also attracted the likes of Jesse Eisenberg
absolutely.
Off the road.
He heard about it on NPR.
The Short North Stage, heard it on NPR.
Right.
Probably one of your promos for it that you're airing on 89.7 NPR News. We will continue our conversation about August Wilson and the August Wilson Festival this year in the city of Columbus. Spearheaded by Short North Stage. And Peter Yackel's with us. Also, Mark Clayton Southers. He's the playwright, director, and producer behind it. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the life and times of acclaimed playwright August Wilson. He died 10 years ago, leaving behind a body of work remarkable on many levels. His plays have been produced across the country, all over the world, and including Broadway, of course. He won the Pulitzer Prize twice for his work, a Tony Award, numerous New York Drama Critics Circle Awards, as well as many more awards, nominations, accolades. The Short North Stage and other arts organizations in Columbus are devoting a year of homage to what is known as perhaps his greatest legacy, a series of 10 plays about the African-American experience in Pittsburgh, known as the Pittsburgh Century Cycle. Coming up, we'll hear from Patricia Winbush of Past Productions. That's a Columbus company devoted to staging works by Black writers and a participant in the festival. Still with us, Peter Yackel, executive director of the Short North Stage. Also, Mark Clayton Southers. He's the director and artistic director of the August Wilson Festival in Columbus, and highly recommend you go to his website. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org to learn more about the remarkable Mark Clayton Southers. Also with us now, Nanette Macy Junes. She's executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art. Welcome back.
Hey, yeah, it's good to be here.
Nanette, lots of people might wonder, what does a museum of art have to do with the likes of a playwright? And you know that I always love it when I can bring in multimedia. But tell us why, in this case, there's this connection.
Well, this connection is that August Wilson, when he talked about, you know, all artists have influence from other artists of previous generations, sometimes of their own generation. He always talked about the four B's influencing him. And one of those big B's for him was Romare Bearden. And luckily, the museum has two wonderful Romare Bearden collages in its collection, thanks to the Schiller Collection. So we've had them since 2005. And so we have them. They are pieces that have... they are collages, so they have paper cutouts part of them. He would cut out from photographs and newspapers and magazines and then create these incredible collage images. In fact, August Wilson saw in the collage technique of Bearden a relationship to his own collage technique in writing. And he often talked about that, trying to make his plays the equal of those canvases, he said. Bearden had been born, and remember, Bearden was born in 1911, so he was, of the previous generation. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great honor to be able to let our audience and let the audience who then will be going to participate in seeing the plays and the readings to see Romare Bearden through new lenses, through new eyes, because you see them both through his eyes, but then now you see them through August Wilson's eyes.
Yeah, Peter, tell me about, when did it occur to you to sort of layer on like this?
Well, when we were going for writing the grant, you just start doing incredible amounts of research. And the whole concept of August Wilson saying that the four B's inspired him.
The four B's being
the blues, Jorge Luis Borges, Romare Bearden, and Amiri Baraka. So it's music, visual arts, political playwriting with a political edge, and sort of universal themes or stream of consciousness sort of storytelling. And so that just cried out to say there is something very rich here. Then there's a practical aspect to it.
Uh-huh.
It would really be difficult for one theater company like Short North Stage to do all 10 plays in a year on our own. He's beloved, but, 10 plays by one playwright would be twice the normal length of a season
anyway,
in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway. And then you just would not even go, attempt that. So you want to collaborations, you want to be creative, you want to bring in all of these influences, and August Wilson set it up for you. It was pretty obvious that this is a direction to go in. And we've also done music.
Right.
On Wednesday night, we had a concert, a blues concert, celebrating the role that blues and jazz has played in the African-American experience and the influence it had on August Wilson and his plays, the musicality that Mark talked about in his words.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mark Lomax trio. It was fabulous. I was mesmerized. I told him that it reminded me of Ramsey Lewis' Sun Goddess, but on a whole different level. And that's a lot to say because it was a masterpiece. And we sat there right in the front row and listened to it. No, I was in the front row. I felt like I was in the front row. I was in the second row. But it was beautiful. It was a beautiful evening. And so we got off to a really great start with Mark's wonderful music.
Yeah. And likewise, Mark was at the opening of Gem of the Ocean mm-hmm. last night.
Yeah, he's
so Mark
between
Lomax.
Me and you, Ann.
Oh, okay.
That was him and his daughter. It was sitting between
okay.
you and I. Yeah.
I was at the premiere of the final, the 12th in the series of Columbus Neighborhoods on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I missed
and,
that.
And I, yeah, you did. And I missed that in the museum experience. But it's theme of this it's Columbus Neighborhoods, New Americans. And in that process of telling that story about immigrants and refugees, they talk about the mass migration of African Americans to the North, how big of a part, that even though we think of them, it's, people tend not to think of them. They were escaping persecution, bondage, even though there had been the Emancipation Proclamation, they were still in bondage. And that's a big theme in Gem of the Ocean.
Right. Absolutely.
The enduring, the effects of that.
Yeah. And Caesar talks about, being the boss man.
Caesar's African-American.
Yeah. He was like the neighborhood sheriff, you could say.
Yeah.
He talks about it. Different people coming there and, him keeping folks in line. And he's trying to make whatever kind of money he can off of folks. He has a bakery,
Yeah.
He has rooms he rents out, But you know what? Caesar in his mind is right about everything. In his mind, he's right. But he leads a rough life because he's dealing with the roughness of the world out there, But he turns out, you would think he was the bad guy, but that's how difficult it was to exist back then.
Right.
But look at present day. It's really difficult for young African males to exist in the world that we live in today, you don't experience it. It's really hard. You can only go by what you see on 11 o'clock news. And that goes back to me saying being a fly on the wall, I will be curious to see what the young playwrights they are coming up with, to tell the stories of what's going on now.
There's really not anything I can think of in August Wilson's work, The Gem of the Ocean, for instance, last night, that doesn't resonate today.
I mean,
he talks about when Caesar is talking about how he struggled to get his business started.
Right.
Well, they had all these regulations mm-hmm. and these rules, and he had to go back and forth. He had to go to the bank. Peter Yackel's nodding, yes.
Yeah.
And he needed to get capital to start his businesses and that kind of a thing. And he talked about that's still an issue.
Right.
But on different levels.
Right.
And he had been in prison as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Unfairly.
There's a part of the play, and only Pittsburghers can really relate to it. But when he comes and serves his warrant to Aunt Esther, and this is 1904. He serves the warrant on Esther, and he says, "Signed by Homer S. Brown." Well, if you go Google Homer S. Brown, I was Homer S. Brown's paper boy. I used to deliver to New Pittsburgh.
He was a real person.
Yeah, I delivered the newspaper to him, the Pittsburgh Courier to him, and Jet magazines. He lived on Anaheim Street, five doors down from my grandmother, a block away from me. And his next door neighbor was the Utterbacks, and I was both of their paper boys, and they would give us nice tips, you know, during Christmas time. And Mrs. Brown would have me come in, and she would give me pastries and stuff. African Americans, well-known African Americans, but August honored him by putting his name in this play. Huh. Although in 1906 there wasn't an African American judge in Pittsburgh. You know, he was a judge. You know, he was a well-known judge. So that's just a little tidbit. Huh. You know.
Nanette Meesey-Jones, the collages are up.
Yes.
At the museum.
Yep.
Where can people see them, and what more are they going to learn about them? Is there anything?
We just had a great, we were also part of the week kickoff. We had a great,
on Wednesday.
Our chief curator, David Stark, worked on a program with Peter so that we had a great lecture kickoff, Wednesdays at 2. We have a Wednesdays at 2 series, and we talked about Romare Bearden this week. And so, there's special signage at the museum, special labeling. One of the pieces that's up of the two, the one that I think is they're both resonant with August Wilson, but really the one that you don't want to miss is watching the good trains go by.
Right, right.
And that it's from 1964, and it is very much about it resonates, and it reaches to the idea of the Great Migration, but then up into the Civil Rights Movement and the idea of trains. It's interesting when you read about Romare Bearden, you can sort of have two ways of seeing it. Either the train is a means of getting to a new life, moving forward, progress, getting out of the South and moving north to better jobs, to a better life. But then Romare Bearden would talk about the fact that he would go down to he was raised in North Carolina, and he would go to the train station with his grandfather to go watch the good trains. Now, the good trains were the trains that, in fact, African Americans could not get on even into that period. And so they were, of course, not in the first class trains. They were not allowed to ride those trains. So you have this idea that there were the good trains, which were the trains for the white people, and also the idea that people who stayed behind watching the trains leave, and you're kind of stuck and staying where you are while other people move on. So trains in this, and this beautifully, and again, I'm talking about layered, the collage has these wonderful layered images in it, including this man with a guitar, which of course speaks again to the importance of music, both to Romare Bearden and to August Wilson. And it's a very, it's not a scale-wise, it's not a big collage, but it packs a punch. It's an extraordinary piece. Mm-hmm. So many people were going to find that collage on the day of the lecture.
Yeah.
So,
Peter Ackle?
If I may, I just wanted to relate a story that happened in Nanette's office back in May. We were talking about the Bearden pieces, and suddenly Nanette, had an idea. She said, you know, Amina Robinson was also a collage artist. And you began to describe the great work that she did for her great aunt, who was born as a, you know, into slavery. And Amina spent 40 years, I guess, creating a cloth collage that the museum was going to unveil again or unroll for the first time in
we
40
did.
Years.
Yes,
and you did. And to which I, you know, was able to say the first show that we're doing, Gem of the Ocean, has a 285-year-old character.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And who is Aunt Esther, who is like Amina Robinson's aunt. And so David Stark, in his presentation on Wednesday at the museum, mentioned Amina Robinson, mentioned the connection between Aunt Esther and Amina Robinson's great aunt. So it's kind of
the collage in the this quilt.
Right,
in
this
the
quilt.
Play, the map.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so what's so wonderful about that is that, you know, August Wilson dealt with universal themes, but there's such a richness there that you can bring it right down to Columbus, Ohio, you
Absolutely.
Know, with our local collage mm-hmm. artist who and her experience creating that quilt for her great aunt.
Mm-hmm. And Themba actually, was such a major figure for her in the carrying of tradition, the carrying of stories. And in fact, Themba was one of the last, you know, probably when we lost Amina Robinson, I lost my personal, like, you know, how many degrees of separation. Amina Robinson knew someone who came to the Middle Passage when she was a child. And so, you know, when you realize that I then knew for 20 some years, someone who then as a child knew someone that came through the Middle Passage is very, it just kind of makes you just, you're.
I have goosebumps.
The Middle Passage being the track to the United States.
Yes. Right. I don't want to do the math on that one. That's kind of, okay. Okay.
Because she lives so long.
Okay. I want to go back to watching the Good Trains.
Yeah.
First of all, David Stark's presentation was fabulous. I was struck and awe by the breadth of it.
Have you had that kind of experience in producing the August Wilson series?
No, but I've heard good friends. Eileen Morris, who is the artistic director at the Houston Ensemble Theater, did a whole season where she used artwork from the museum there. And one of my plays, Ashes to Africa, was part of that season. And they used artwork from different artists that was in line with the theme of the plays. And so she's done that and talked. It's always been something that I've been interested in. I collect art myself, you know. I love art. I love art. I grew up in a world of art. But what I want to talk about is Two Trains Running. First of all, August refers to Two Trains Running as life and death. And talking about watching the Good Trains, we talked about it the other day at the museum, the expressions on this group of folks who were the main body in the work, about six folks that were standing there watching the Good Trains. And they all had this, for lack of better words, a drugged look on their face. There wasn't excitement. It wasn't happy. It was a sad, it was a gloomy look, like, but there was hope in their eyes. But it was as though they were being left behind. But they were free. They were free. So when you think about the encampments, you think about Auschwitz and things like that, and looking at folks behind the fences. I've been to Auschwitz twice in Birkenau. I feel a connection with the Middle Passage. When I was at Auschwitz, standing on those grounds, I felt a connection because I was able to understand that it wasn't just my ancestors that were brutally, you know, snatched away. I was able to look at pictures and see rooms full of hair and glasses and limbs, you know, prosthetic limbs and rooms. And I was able to look at the water at the end of the tracks in Birkenau that was still gray from the ashes. And it was shocking. But when you look at this Romare Bearden piece, Watching the Good Trains, you can look in their eyes and see the sadness that they don't expect in their lifetime to ever be able to be on that train.
But they're free.
But they're not on that good train.
Yeah.
And I think that's true for a lot of young folks, young African Americans in this world. They see people in the NBA and pro football players making great livings, and these rappers that are, you know, having extravagant lives, but they're left in poverty, and they think that's the only way out. You know, it's a real difficult world to negate, you know, as a young African man. You see what's happening with the police shootings and the black on black crime. It's terrible. It's terrible.
They're free, but.
Yeah, exactly. They're free, but they're not on that good train, you know. And not only that, they're being treated a certain way by the folks who are enjoying the slice of American pie, you know. The people that are supposed to be protecting and serving that are so frustrated and act out because just the way they've grown up in life, watching 11 o'clock news and thinking that, you know, this is always going to be this way, you know. We need some real leaders in the world, and that's what's lacking, you know.
We're talking about not political science, not politics right now, but the great art of playwright August Wilson. You just heard from Mark Clayton Southers. He's a playwright, director, and producer, and artistic director of the August Wilson Festival this year in the city of Columbus. Peter Yackel, also with us, board president for the Short North Stage, helped get this festival underway. Nanette Macy-Junes, executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's almost impossible to overstate the importance of the legacy of playwright August Wilson. He died young at the age of 60 in 2005, but over the course of the last 25 years of his life, he produced an unparalleled series of 10 plays exploring the heritage and experience of African Americans decade by decade throughout the 20th century. The Short North Stage and other arts organizations in Columbus are devoting a year to what is known as the Pittsburgh Century Cycle. We just heard from Nanette Macy-Junes, executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art. I highly recommend you get over there and check out their contribution to this effort. Still with us is Peter Yackel, executive director of the Short North Stage, kind of the force behind all of this to begin with. Also with us, Mark Clayton Southers. He's the director and artistic director of the August Wilson Festival in Columbus. He's a playwright in his own right, a director and producer. He's from Pittsburgh, which is also the hometown of August Wilson. Joining us now is Patricia Winbush of Past Productions. That's a Columbus company, a pretty new one, devoted to staging works by Black writers. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you so much. And let me correct you, Past Productions Columbus.
Sorry.
Because if you just key in Past Productions, you'll get all kinds of stuff.
Sorry about that. Past Productions,
that's okay.
Columbus. All right. Good point. Nope. And we'll have links to all these organizations, including Mark Clayton Southers' webpage on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Patricia, Past Productions Columbus will present Two Trains Running.
Correct.
Got it right because I had it written down. And Radio Golf.
Yes.
How did you all divvy up the parts of the series? How did that work?
We just
said, I'll take that. No, yeah. I'll do that. Yeah.
We kind of just, oh, I want that one. I want that one.
Uh-huh.
As far as the whole
festival,
festival, we had actually done Two Trains Running before.
Okay.
And Peter had seen that we had done it before. And we said, well, we're going to do that one again.
Okay.
But Radio Golf, I think, is a great play. It was the last play that he endeavored to finish before he passed.
That was the last one in the series.
Right, right.
Have you seen all of them produced?
I have seen 5 of the 10.
Okay.
2 on Broadway, 2, I saw a couple here locally. I'm so excited about the fact that we're doing all of them.
Right.
The chance to see that. Past production started out as 4 of us. There's myself, my husband, Truman Winbush, Tony Roseborough, and Scott Porter. We've known each other for over 30 years. And we said, we need to do something because there's not enough outlet for Black actors of a certain age, we shall say. we kind of got together to just produce shows that we wanted to do. There's musicals being done. There's new art, new works that are being done.
Yeah.
But there's so many plays that have not been seen. Two Trains Running, I don't think, had ever been done in Columbus. Well, no, I can't say that. Catco did that back in 96. But we wanted to do stuff that we liked. And so we're real excited about the chance to do this. We're real excited about the chance for local Black actors to get a chance to get up on stage and do a great work. So August is just is great.
You know, Mark Clayton Southers was talking about how whites are kind of flies on the wall when it comes to a lot of these stories, these settings, of course. And what's that like? I mean, for black actors, how big of a deal is it to be on stage with all black actors, all things being equal, except for the ancillary white that pops in?
There's a language, and there's some things that you just say and everyone will get. I was relating this to a show that my husband and I had seen years ago. Do patent leather shoes reflect up?
Yeah.
Which deals with Catholic schools. And we went there and people were laughing at stuff. And we're like, what?
Yeah.
What? It was a whole different language.
Yeah.
And I think that's something when you do a black show, there's certain things that people will get because it's like, oh, Uncle Willie. Yeah. And but, you know, the white audience will get because it's like, well, OK, yeah, that's something interesting. You know, I guess
that
I get
TV
that
one time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I know Mark had brought up earlier, he's like, you took almost all of my talking points anyway. there was a quote.
You're on a roll.
Got to represent. There's a quote from the Paris Review from August, and it says, I think my plays offer white Americans a different way to look at black Americans, recognizing that these things, love, honor, beauty, betrayal, duty, are as much a part of the black man's life as theirs, can affect how they think about and deal with black people in their lives. And it's like, well, yeah. I mean, that's something I want to get across. Just because this is a festival honoring a black playwright that's showcasing the black experience, it's not like, well, I can't go. I don't understand. No.
It's the American experience.
Yes, exactly. So I hope that we will get a cross-section of audience just to experience this great man's work.
Peter Yackel.
If I could add to that, as a white person in the audience, you're immediately struck by the fact that although you knew perhaps your own history and, you know, what these plays indicate very clearly is that now you have another layer of American history to add to your understanding of the century.
Right.
And it's so rich. It's so wonderful. It's liberating. It's liberating.
And August Wilson, an incredible talent at making people feel like they're getting sort of that. What I think of course, as a journalist, you know, 30 years in print and now in radio, the idea of what's it like to be you? That question that I think is always behind everything. And it doesn't feel cold and you don't feel left out. You might feel like a left fly on the wall, but it doesn't feel unwarm or unwelcome.
Yeah.
It's not exclusionary.
Exactly. It's encompassing. He touches on so many different levels. Like Mark was saying, you know, it's deep.
You know, you're getting emotional, Mark. Peter, you got emotional last night.
Yeah.
It's emotional.
Yes. It relates. The first show that we're doing, two trains running, the one character, Hamba, I don't want to spoil things.
Find an artistic way to say it.
I know.
Creative.
I know. when one of the characters has an incident, the audience reacts because it happens in the second act. And when that when the audience reacts verbally and you can hear them, it's like they connected and that's such a great feeling.
Yeah, he was entwined in their acceptance of they're being part of it.
Right.
His journey was entwined in their emotions.
In Gem of the Ocean last night, the way you staged it, you have one of the characters actually coming into the audience and sitting in.
I don't know about tonight. we got to put some chairs back because we got a bunch of folks coming.
Okay.
So. But that might change.
Well, that's the way you can miss it out when you don't go to the premiere.
We got a special rehearsal tonight just to
figure that one out.
To figure out how we can get the chairs back in. But what were you going to say?
You could do
though?
It again. I mean, yeah, that was your choice of doing it. Was that part of that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The way Patricia's describing
The whole idea is, first of all, we're in a flux space, a space that is changed around constantly. And the whole idea is that because it was a stage reading, I'm working with some really great actors that are flexible to do different things. I talked about this in one of the rehearsals that, you know, as a director, the first thing I think about is the audience. We're here to tell this author's words, but who are we telling it to? We're telling it to the audience. And who is that audience member? Well, the average audience member is, what did we say it was, a 55-year-old white woman?
For American theater.
Yes. American theater, you know.
Interesting. But, no comment.
You know, well, it's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
We can't not look at the reality of it. But so I always think that I always think about the audience. Let me just say that. And our theater is a black box theater. In Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Playwrights Theater Company, where I'm the artistic founder and artistic director.
Black box, meaning that's
small,
actually what you're in.
Black walls, yeah. And we have 99 seats, and people really love our work. What people really say about it is that they like the intimacy of it. And, I've never seen this play done. They sign it in a 500, 600 seat theater, and they come see it in our theater with a 99 seats, and they see a whole different play because they're that close to the actors.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do in this space was to take it even further and bring the actors up into the audience in a way. But the big issue was the pole. You know, I didn't want to have that wonderful quilt that we have that is on loan from the St. Louis Black Rep. I'll drop a name here. Ron Himes, my good friend and artistic director, overnighted to us. It's a wonderful quilt. And I wanted everyone to see the quilt.
Yeah, okay.
And with that pole there, the actors would have had to keep moving back and forth.
It's an important pole. It's holding up the ceiling.
So that was really a way to mask that pole. And, you know, our very first location for the Pittsburgh Playwrights, we had H-beams in every quarter. It was crazy. And we had to always block around that. So, you know, that was a good preparation for this experience.
I love the Short North Stage. I love what they're doing, and I see it's all under construction now. There's all kinds of work going on. Peter Yackel, we only have a few minutes left, and before we go, I want to, besides Columbus Museum of Art and also Past Productions Columbus, what other organizations in Columbus are participating in this festival of August Wilson's work?
First and foremost, the King Arts Complex is involved. They're going to be doing a number of things over the course of the year. First thing that they will be doing is they'll be screening in their very beautiful, very historic Pythian Theater, the PBS special, August Wilson, The Ground on Which I Stand, that happens February 17th. Denison University is going to put up a production of The Piano Lesson, and that is in October of 2016. That will happen on their campus and at the Garden Theater.
Denison out in Granville, right?
Yes, yeah. And then also the museum, as I already mentioned, is doing this almost half a year long special exhibition of the work of Bearden and Amina Robinson and its connection to August Wilson. We have Fort Hays High School. This is sort of an interesting story. The one show that you cannot license this year because there's some rumors about it being revived on Broadway is Joe Turner's Come and Gone.
And so it's actually open back up now. To tell you that.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
So, but in the meantime,
at the time
we were planning the festival, it was not possible to license it. But you could have young students, study the work. So Fort Hays High School is going to study the work, Joe Turner, as part of the festival. And then there are several dance companies that will be participating. They will do dance. And then, of course, the Mark Lomax Trio. Mm-hmm. And the John Stone Fund for New Music, which is underwriting Mark Lomax's work.
Wow.
And we're working at bringing in Daryl Ford Williams from Pittsburgh's WQED station. She was the producer for The Ground on Which I Stand. We're working at bringing her in on the 17th to talk about her journey in getting that production done.
What an incredible documentary, The Ground on Which I Stand. Well, August Wilson, The Ground on Which I Stand, of course, is available. You know, you can see it, but I think it's definitely one of those things it would be great to see with other people. We kind of miss that when we can watch everything online these days. Patricia Wimbush, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime I can get off work, just give me a call.
Patricia Wimbush, she's director at Pass Productions Columbus, co-founder and director, right?
Co-producer.
Co-everything.
Driver of the Winnebago, yes.
Peter Yackel, thanks to you as well, board president for the Short North Stage. Thanks for bringing this festival to the city.
Oh, it's been a privilege. I mean, it's a journey that will, it's just so rich. I'm so grateful to be part of it myself.
Mark Clayton Southers, playwright, director, and producer, artistic director for the August Wilson Festival in the city of Columbus. Thanks to you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to the Allside staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, the Allside's interns Summer Cartwright, Khalid Moalim, and Sydney Schaefer, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Eric French was over across the window subbing today. Thanks, Eric, for your hard work. And thanks, everybody, for listening. This is Allside's with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.